Glenn, no problem. You're ready to go. Glenn,
I knew that. All right. I would like to call to order the Westmont Public Library Finance Committee meeting on Tuesday, November 17th at 6:30 p.m. Can I have a roll call, please?
Treasurer O'Connor?
Here.
Vice President Martins?
Here.
Secretary Delano?
Here.
Trustee Parikh?
Here.
That's all the members of the committee.
All right, Pledge of Allegiance. If you do not have a flagpole in your room, just face east. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
To the flag.
To the Republic.
To the Republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Was that in sync for anyone? That was terrible. All right, open forum. Does anybody have anything to say? All right, hearing nothing, let's move on to item 5. New business, A, discussion of cash flow analysis report.
Okay, so hopefully everyone got this document in the email that I sent. It's a larger, a larger document, so I sent it separately. And you'll remember we do this every year. We do it in the spring just to project out through every month what our cash flow will look like. And then we did it again this year in midsummer. I can't remember the exact month, but we did it just because we had some concerns about property tax disbursements and when we would be receiving those. And then I just did it again because it's Finance Committee and you can see the bigger picture because by this point we've received most of our property tax revenue. So we should have one more small disbursement in December. So if you look at that, the top half under the revenue section, you can scroll across and see where we are with property taxes so far. We're pretty spot on as to where we were this time last year. So I'm pretty optimistic we'll get that last deposit in December and we'll be basically right where we should be with property taxes. So that's the good news. And that's the real reason we did this exercise so many times this year, just because with everything going on, we weren't quite sure. And because that represents about 98% of our revenue. So obviously a big piece of the pie. So so that's good news. As far as the other revenue, we have received our per capita grant. That's also great news just because it's from the state and we never know what funding will look like for them. So that's good. We've talked about that last month, how that's gonna be spent. Interest income is obviously significantly lower than what we anticipated. We approved the budget in March with clearly no idea with, you know, how this year was going to really play out for us. So obviously I anticipated more than what is reality. So we'll be under on the interest income. But fines and fees and donations and miscellaneous, we should also be pretty close to on target. We have been so far month over month. So those are a lot smaller pieces of our overall revenue stream. But I did just want to revisit this with the Finance Committee just so I quite enjoyed doing it every month. I would plug in the numbers and see how close I was to projecting that month. So if I got it close, I was really excited. But I think it's just a good exercise for us to do. And then on the expense side, and these are all, as I said, these are all accurate through October. If you look at the October column down, those are all accurate. We have those firm numbers. November under property tax is actually accurate as well because I did get that number at the beginning of this month, so I did add that in. But if you look down through expenses, all of the ones through October are accurate. And so, again, kind of going across each one, we're pretty close to being on target. I don't anticipate any huge variations from what we projected with the budget, with one exception being mostly under the salaries and benefits, which is also obviously our hugest expense. We have several vacancies that happened in the spring, and we've not filled any of those. So we have one that we had posted, although now I know Brittany and Marcy are kind of evaluating what to do with that one. But so that's where our biggest surplus will come from this year. So again, that's a projection. This is, you know, assuming we didn't, that we only filled the one that we were looking to fill through the rest of the fiscal year. That could totally change. It's all projection right now. You know, come February, if things really turned around and we were able to fill a librarian position, wonderful. And, you know, because we're open fully and back to full traffic and full circulation, but it's just so hard for us to know. We're kind of taking it month by month. So that's where our biggest surplus will come from. So overall, and excuse me, I know I've talked to several of you about several different issues. So I want to make sure if I had a conversation with you, I'm bringing up all the points that we brought up in our conversation. But if I don't, just make sure you jump in and we can mention those. But that's where overall surplus will come from for this year. There was a good question, you know, were we looking, because we are going to have that surplus that wasn't anticipated, are we looking at other, you know, maybe some minor renovation projects or facility things we could do because foot traffic is also very low. Excellent. And we have talked about that on the staff side. A little tricky. I'm trying to make sure that the foot traffic in the building overall is just low. So they would have to be minor projects. Also making sure we didn't go over appropriation and other ones, just because we have surplus in salaries that I'm not going over on facility maintenance. I don't think that's a danger of going over appropriation, but it's always just something I remember. But that being said, there are a few things that we staff have identified as far as, you know, hopefully maybe we could squeak them in this fiscal year instead of next fiscal year. So we are getting quotes on some things, nothing major. Nothing that's you know, gonna take us over budget by any means. But as we get those, we'll bring those to you to see what you think. But overall, I just wanted to give you the full picture, because I think this is very close now that we have our property tax information, and just get, you know, if there's any questions or thoughts about it, concerns.
Can you enlighten me as to why the interest income is so low?
Because interest income is gone in the tank.
Yeah, I will say that we're seeing the very same thing on the village side. So all the interest rates are significantly down this year compared to where they had been. I think it's just kind of a result of where the economy is right now. So the drop to being about 10% is pretty close to what we're seeing as well.
What type of interest are we talking about? What sort of accounts are these? I thought it was a savings type account where you couldn't possibly get much less interest than you know, rock bottom.
Yeah. So the way that this is set up is they are kind of like a savings account, but what they're doing is they're tied to a group called the Illinois Funds Account that is kind of a pooled fund. And so the bank tied to the Illinois Funds account, I think, quite a while ago, and the Illinois Funds has kind of changed how they do things, and they're investing and doing a little bit more with the money. So the interest rates that the banks that deal with municipalities are giving have been a little bit higher now that the Illinois Funds isn't investing as much and isn't doing as well. So therefore, the bank account interest rates drop as well. So they are really a savings account, and it's kind of an odd type of savings account, which they call a max safe savings account, where they spread it out technically over a whole bunch of different individual banks within a holding company so that we can max out the FDIC. That gives them a little bit of extra wiggle room in terms of collateral. So when the economy is doing well, they're able to get a little bit more interest out of it. When the economy is doing poorly and general interest rates go down, then the interest rates kind of tank.
It's probably also worth noting that our projected interest income is 1/10% of our total revenue. So it's not, even though it's down, it's not going to hurt us. Also, Julia, thank you for your answer. I was the one that had asked about potential projects in the building. I just wanted to say that you guys are feeling stretched with just keeping things running and making changes as things change. And so I did not mean to add any extra pressure up. You also make the building look pretty in your spare time. But I wanted to note that from a financial standpoint, it's a pretty nice cushion that we are projecting, that if there was something that it made sense to spend the money on, it feels like even with the uncertainty, it still felt like we had quite a bit of projected surplus at this point in the fiscal year, that it would make sense, to spend the money if that was an option, I guess is what I was saying.
Correct. No, and I didn't take your questions that way. I actually quite enjoyed them. But that segues nicely into the next discussion item, which is our capital outlay report. And so, what I didn't mention is that I am queuing up. We do have, several projects coming up. Well, not several, but we have one large project coming up. And that's the parking lot project, and that's FY22. So technically, that's May. That's not that far away from us. So that is my winter project, is to plan that one out. Any surplus we have from this year, as you all know, goes into our special reserves and is then used for facility updates. We have talked about this as a staff and other libraries as well. The foot traffic being so low, it is like that ideal time to do some renovation projects. It also just is, just for a lot of reasons, tricky, even just getting, crew workers in. So, but I am queuing up the parking lot project. So it is my top other besides pandemic type projects this winter is to get that ready. It'd be great if we could strike the iron on that one as soon as the weather turns. So it is, kind of in depth, and we will have to go out to bid and do some of that stuff. But that is the goal for that one. We do have, and I'm sorry, I am really just jumping into the next topic unless someone else had questions about cash flow or comments. We do have two other minor items that were for this fiscal year, and that's the parking lot, the fence in the parking lot, and the masonry caps on the front of the building. So the fence, it's super minor, and I don't even know if we necessarily need to replace it. There is a new owner of the house over there because we couldn't get in touch with the previous owners. There's a brand new owner who's been doing some work in the backyard, taking trees down and whatnot. So I'm going to reach out to whoever that new owner is and just have a conversation with them about, what they think about the fence. So I'll let you know, but it's very minor project. And the same with the masonry caps in the front of the building. Again, not a high cost project, but another one that I'll be working on this winter to try and figure that one out. That one's, it's just not very fun, to be honest with you. It's just like, masonry caps and seeping water. So I will look at those. So, we do anticipate kind of year over year that the surplus from the previous fiscal year to be about 50,000. And like I said, we're looking at probably, higher than that from this fiscal year. Obviously with, the note about that's, it's not all straight surplus all the time. We have to do the audit and all those other calculations. But as Annie said, it is looking like a healthier one. So that would help the capital outlay projections as far as budgets and bottom lines there. So so that's that. So that's the capital outlay report. Nothing major to report on that one. I feel like we talk about it pretty regularly, so you guys know what's coming up. But if there's any questions about that or comments, happy to talk about that one as well. We do have the second floor renovation project slated. We did phase that one out, and that would be FY23, which sounds like it's really far away, but it wouldn't be that far away as far as, kind of doing a needs assessment. And this would be a fun project, kind of looking at those things, getting an architect, coming up with different solutions. So that one would be coming up too for staff to start working on. So.
Any other questions or discussions on item 5B, discussion of capital outlay report?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it looks like we're well positioned for that second floor maintenance. That wasn't the case necessarily the last year or two, but we've had some healthy surpluses and stuff that have put us in a good spot.
Yeah, we have. And we also split it into the phases for a while, we were doing it as all one project, which does have benefits. You know, there's pros and cons to doing it each way. But once we split it out, it was kind of, it seemed like the magic, you know, magic numbers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I'm a lot happier looking at what those, what that looks like, and not being worried about still having money for the other things that might pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done, Julia. If there's no other discussion on 5B, let's go on to item 5C, recommend the next Finance Committee agenda for February 2020.
Well, that's going to be exciting. That's going to be the budget. First budget go around, if you can believe it.
Wow.
This year has been so long, but yet so quick. I don't know how that works, but it's hard to believe that we're going to be going into that cycle again already. So the budget will be the main item for that meeting. I will look back. I did just look through the finance policies, but we'll look through those again. It's possible there might be some things we want to revisit, or at least just have the board review, just so that it's documented that you reviewed some of those. So add those to the agenda as well. And we did have, I'll just kind of throw this out there. It's just everything's, well, not everything, but these two items have been put on hold. We did do some research on alternate revenue sources. And when I say we, in this instance, I mean Marcy. She looked into us potentially being license plate renewal sticker, you know, issuing those. Since a lot of the currency exchanges don't do that anymore, and it's harder for in-person service for that. Obviously, through the Secretary of State, you can go online and do it, but there are a couple other libraries that have popped up doing it, and it is an alternate revenue source because you are allowed to add a certain fee on top of that. So she did a lot of background research on that. It just right now wasn't the best time for us to roll out anything brand spanking new. But, you know, it's possible that maybe by February we feel more comfortable bringing that to you guys. It might not be February. It might be the next round. But it is possible that that could be on there as well. So.
So just so I'm clear, the for item 5C, we're just doing the budget. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just asking about other options we could add to the agenda that we might add. Yeah.
So. Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Any other discussion on item 5C? If not, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. And I believe once we adjourn, we are all muting our microphones. Is that right? But leaving the feed open?
Unless you want the public to hear us chit chat about pizza or whatnot, which is fine. I don't think it matters, right? They could. We just can't talk library business.
So we are not necessarily muting them, but we are leaving the line open.
Yeah,
that is correct. I would suggest maybe turning off your video until you're ready to restart your meeting again, too.
Okay. All right. Then I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Two of us.
I heard John and then Rajesh.
Yep. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Then it looks like we are adjourned at 6:49 p.m.
Good.
All right, well, welcome back, except for Carrie and Heather, who hopefully can join us very quickly here since it's 7. There's one. Look at how happy he is to be back. There's the other. Look at us all so happy. So, all right then, since we are all here, then Glenn, we're still recording, so no need for Glenn. Not no need for Glenn, but you understand, so. All right, then I would like to call to order the regular meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Westmont Public Library on Tuesday, November 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m. We have determined that an in-person meeting is not practical or prudent because of the public health disaster declaration in Illinois. This virtual meeting is open to all and is also being recorded. Finally, in an effort to provide even greater transparency, all votes at this meeting will be taken as roll call votes. Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Here.
Trustee Carmichael?
Here.
Secretary Delano?
Here.
Vice President Martins?
Here.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Here.
Trustee Parikh?
Here.
President Fichtel?
Here. And Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
On to the approval of the consent agenda, which includes the minutes of the regular board meeting of October 20th, 2020. The communication log of November 2020 and the director's report of November 2020.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
John and Annie, discussion? Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fichtel?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
Thank you. On to open forum, public. Spencer, hello.
Hello.
I don't know if anyone else is out there. I think we have anybody else lounging around. So on to board members. Rajesh, I see you first.
Nothing.
Thank you. Elaine?
Nothing.
John?
Nothing tonight.
Carrie?
Nothing.
Annie?
I got nothing, sorry.
And Heather?
I'll say something. I might have just missed it in past board reports. That is entirely possible, but I liked seeing the staff anniversaries that Marcy included. It's worked to keep track of all those things. And I know that's just like a small sampling of all the staff that celebrate anniversaries throughout the year, but seeing the numbers there and the longevity of some staff. And then also like, Elizabeth's only been here for 4 years, but it seems like she was a part of my kid's whole childhood. Like, it's nice to have that acknowledged. And I appreciate the staff that whose anniversaries that were there and I and those who weren't there too. So it was nice to see that.
That is the first time we reported that. So I tasked Julie with putting a calendar together with all the staff anniversaries. So that pops up for all of us all the time now. So, and it was the first time, yeah, that Marcy added that into the report. So it is nice. And we have a lot of staff who've worked here for a really long time. And then, like you said, there's some new people that you're like, what? They've only been here a year? I feel like they're rock stars. So I agree.
Thank you. Then on to the director.
Have anything. Mostly because everything that I have to say and that's on my mind is item C under new business. So I think I'll save most of what I have to say and get your feedback at that time. But other than that, we're just I can't say smooth sailing because of what's going on, but staff are we've been checking in with them regularly just to see how everyone's doing and how they're feeling with the safety protocols we have in place, as I mentioned, I believe, in my update. So we're making sure that our communication, both up and down, we're making sure we're probably over communicating just to make sure that everyone knows what's going on, what the conversations are being had, and if there's any feedback that they have for us for things that we can do. So, but other than that, staff, I think are doing well, so.
Okay. Brittany.
I have nothing.
Julie?
I don't have anything either.
Fair enough. We are cruising along. All right, then, on to additions and deletions.
Move to add the additions and delete the deletions.
Second.
Heather and Rajesh. Discussion? Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fichtel?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
On to Treasurer's Report.
Move to approve the Treasurer's Report for audit.
Second.
Carrie and John, discussion. Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fichtel?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
And the treasurer's report is filed for audit. On to bills and salaries.
I'll move to approve bills and salaries.
Second.
I think Annie was the second. John and Annie. Discussion. Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fichtel?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
Thank you. No unfinished business. So on to new business item A. Board to consider a motion to approve the fiscal year 20 audit and management letter.
Move to approve the audit and management letter.
Second.
Heather and Elaine. Discussion.
I do have a question. I think this is on page 2 of the management level. I didn't, or letter, I didn't print out the whole thing, but it said, it says the library has not presented a management's discussion and analysis as required supplementary information that accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America require to be presented to supplement the basic financial statements. Do we have to do that? Have we done it? Or are we going to do it?
So I will say in the past, the library has not done that. They've just provided the financial statements to get kind of to the full level of, you know, what we'd submit to the GFOA and kind of the full level. It would also be kind of included in that. That's something the village does each year, but is not something the library has ever done since I've been associated with it. So it's not something that has to be done. It's just to hit the highest level of what the auditors say is this would be ideal. It would be great. I don't know that it's necessary. It's usually used kind of to summarize some of the high level details in the report. I think your report is straightforward enough that it kind of can present that information kind of just as it is. I think any of your, you know, creditors or anybody who would be looking at it would be able to tell how your finances are doing without it. But it would be something you could do if you wanted to, but haven't done and don't really need to.
Thanks, Pastor.
This is Rajesh. I think, John, thanks for bringing it up. I did also notice that sentence in the report, and I was not sure what it really means, you know. So, Spencer, what exactly, supposing if we need to provide that, what does it mean? And in sense, what does the trustees have to do to submit to that kind of a request?
So it would largely be something that would be put together. So I'll just kind of walk through how it's done at the village level. So in the finance department, we go through the audit and then we pull out some specific highlights. We put them in some different charts. We add some graphs and we do kind of a general overview where we say, here's one number in your report. Here's what it was last year. It changed this percent. If it's kind of a big percent, then we'll say, here's why it changed. I will say it gets a little bit complicated. And in many instances, the answer is it's something weird and complicated in pensions. And the reason for that is when you're talking about a management discussion and analysis, you're talking at the entity-wide level. So in your audit report, you'll notice there's kind of two ways to present the figures. So there's the way that you would look at like a business where you would say, okay, here's the library building, here's how much it's worth. Any debt you would push out, you all account for it one way. And then you also have to take it and say, here's how you look at it when you split out the individual funds and you look at a different, what's called measurement focus and different time horizon for your different things, where really you're looking to say, this kind of information is what's going to happen this year. And it's really about what taxes we need for this year. That's how we function almost the entirety of the year. At the very end of the year, really for the audit, we put together that other piece, I think on your treasurer's reports, it's usually listed as fund 12. That kind of includes all these year-to-date adjustments. That's the numbers you're talking about in the management discussion and analysis. And so I feel like it's good for accountants. They get it. They understand it. I've always thought it interesting that we focus so much on the piece that only ever gets looked at once a year. So we do it just because it's kind of the gold standard and we do it to get a GFOA award. And I think, you know, when we're going out for bonds, people like to look at it and see it. I hate to say, I don't know that it adds a lot of value, but that's kind of my opinion on it. So what your staff, you could have your staff or you could have us, you know, in finance, we could probably throw something together for that. I think, you know, your staff would have to be looking at it and really it would officially be coming from your staff and saying it's the explanation. We could look at putting something together like that if you'd like it. But really you'd just be doing it to check a box.
Right. And the other point, you know, on the management letter side is there was no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses that we have had before, not because of, you know, that it's anything glaring, but just because we've not had the expertise on staff to do independent reporting on a few things. So, but that is not on this letter and it wasn't on it last year as well. So it's just something to point out that, you know, it's not on there. I echo what Spencer said. I don't have the expertise to look at it in all those different ways. I'm not an accountant. So we would definitely be relying on the village for their help on that. And personally, like he said, I don't think that there's a lot of value add to that. I don't think we have, taxpayers or anyone looking at that to look at these, the different ways of looking at these reports. So I'm, unless the, trustees really want that, and we would have to get village help on that. But.
And I can certainly send out to Julie and she can pass on to the board a copy of what the village's management discussion and analysis looks like, just so you can see it and see if you think that it would be valuable to add to the audit. That would be fine.
I think one of the reasons it caught my attention was, supposing I'm a layman reading the report, it kind of says that the library has not done what it was supposed to do. I may not know all the details of the accounting process, but if I'm reading the report, and this was not there last year in the report. So why is it this year? Has the auditing standards changed and that this is expected every year? That's what I was trying to figure out.
I don't know. I don't know that the standards have changed. I mean, they do change regularly, but I don't know that we've not done this. So we didn't do it last year either.
As I recall, in previous audits, we've had a note saying that our only deficiency was that we didn't have an in-house auditor or someone in-house that would have been, a salaried position. I think that's the typical, in the past, has been the typical deficiency that comes up. And I think the conclusion was the same for that one as well, although they appear to be different issues, which is, it's not hurting anything and there's not nearly enough benefit to justify the cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Discussion. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I will note that information. So the comment about the MD&A is listed in there. It's not listed under the section of deficiencies or material weaknesses, kind of as noted. So it's just sort of an information that So let me back up. So I'll say, from a layman's point of view, I understand it looks like there's something that we're missing that we should have. And so we can talk with the auditors too, and just kind of see if there's any way to get any other kind of explanation in there about it. So we can look and see if there's any wiggle room for that. I can also look at what reports indicated last time, but it's not listed as an issue of a material weakness or a deficiency. And it does, in that same paragraph, say that doesn't impact their opinion on the financial statements, which still remains the unmodified opinion. So.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion, questions? Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes. Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fichtel?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
Thank you, Spencer, for your help with interpreting the fine points.
Yes. On to new business item B, board to discuss the fiscal year 21 per capita grant application requirements.
Yes, there's actually not much more to discuss because we have not received the material that you need to actually discuss it. So it's on back order, and hopefully we receive that soon. So as mentioned briefly here and in the very brief explanation to you, they have delayed the application due date, which is great news. It's usually January, it's now back to March. And what it is you guys have reviewed the standard 3.0 there's a new edition, a 4.0, and so they're going to ask you to review that in its entirety. Sounds a lot scarier than it is, as you can probably remember the chapters are like 2 to 3 pages each. It's nothing, nothing too overwhelming. And then each chapter has a checklist, and staff will also be doing that, and we will report out where we are as far as meeting those standards for each chapter. And we're just going to make sure that the board is aware of that. And if we want to identify anything, if in case we aren't meeting those standards, how could we meet those standards? So unfortunately, we're still just kind of waiting for ILA and Rails to get us those back ordered items. As soon as those come in, I will send those to you so you can start your homework.
Thank you. Then on to new business item C, discussion of library service plans during COVID resurgence and approval of a list of essential services.
So how about we tackle the discussion part first, and then we can do the essential services piece if you decide you want to vote on that one way or the other. So there's a lot to say about, you know, what's going on in our service levels. But I'll just back up a little bit and say, you know, in the spring when this all started happening, when things started to peak, as you know, I don't have to tell you all this stuff, but we closed. And then that was during the stay-at-home order. And then as that, you know, kind of, we then phased into curbside and allowed some appointments in the building for computer use before we opened the building fully in July. So, at that time, the way that the governor and IDPH looked at public libraries, well, they didn't give us anything specific. They said, you know, you're local government, so you have the right to decide what services to provide. The way a lot of libraries looked at it was the closest industry we could model our services on was retail. And so we looked at, you know, when did he allow retail to reopen? What kind of services were they allowed to offer? And that's what most libraries in the area in Illinois followed because there was no specific guidance for us. So fast forward to now, and obviously the cases are high. They're higher than they were in the spring. Hospitalizations are higher. And even though we've learned a lot about, you know, the spread, we're still trying to figure out the best service model that we should be following. So assuming, and it does sound like the governor is not going to give any library specific guidance or IDPH, they are still, you know, saying you're local government. So you make the determination. So, and that did seem to be, that rationale did seem to be backed up by his press conference today and the further guidance that they released right after the press conference. So if you don't know, all of Illinois has moved into tier 3. I know, and it gets really confusing because there's phases and then there's tiers and there's regions and you have to decipher it all. So as of Friday, all of Illinois has moved back to tier 3. And then to make it even more exciting, he changed what tier 3 means as of today versus what it meant yesterday. So libraries were going on the assumption that tier 3 meant retail was closed and it was just curbside service. So that's what a lot of libraries were going to use as their metric for when they would go back to curbside as well. He did change that today and said retail can remain open at 25% capacity. So, but that we should be doing, you know, your circulation flow should be quick and service points should not be congested. So that kind of threw, I think, a lot of libraries in the area for a loop because it was kind of like, well, when we got to tier 3, they would go back to curbside. And some libraries had already decided to go back to curbside. So a lot of Rails libraries, a lot of North Suburban have already gone back to curbside. As I mentioned in the email, Downers Grove went back to curbside. Thomas Ford just announced they are starting tomorrow. Libraries have started to model that. But what the governor also said today, and it's in the phrasing for tier 3, is that local governments should take should voluntarily take action to meet the mitigation strategies wherever possible. So that's where I'm looking at that. And if you heard his press conference, he really is begging everyone to do whatever they can to stop the spread of this thing. So where it's a little tricky for us is if you look at, you know, our foot traffic here and what it's been, I don't think it's a overwhelming problem as far as spread in the building because the foot traffic is just so low. We are at about 25% capacity at most points throughout the day. But I also want us to be a responsible employer. I want us to do whatever we can to help, you know, be part of the solution. And then, you know, we've been in constant contact with the other library directors for the past couple of weeks, and then especially today, flurry of emails. There's probably some that I haven't even read yet. All of us sharing what we're doing. We've always tried to stay in unison. We just feel like that's best for our residents and just messaging as well. So as of when the board meeting started, it did sound like, and most of us all have meetings either tonight or tomorrow night with our boards. So we were all kind of guessing on what board feedback would be. But it does sound like Downers is already curbside. Hinsdale's meetings tonight, she thinks they'll be going back to curbside. Oakbrook, Lyle, Woodridge, LaGrange Park, Thomas Ford, are all leaning towards curbside. The only one of our neighbors that I'm aware of that's saying let's keep open for more than that is Indian Prairie. So they are looking at potentially, it would just be their residents. They would be checking people as they come in to make sure they're residents and allowing them in. So as I put in my email to you, you know, what we were looking at, you know, if we do this based on feedback from you or, you know, even down the road, is not just straight curbside. We would like to do what we did in June, which is still allow folks to make, residents to make appointments for computer use because there are people in this community who don't have internet and don't have devices to access the internet. And we knew that last time and that was a hardship. And then we definitely heard that after we opened. So I do not want to cut that off entirely if we can help it. So we would allow for that. We also have we have a notary on staff. We also know that that was something that was really hard for people to find notaries when everything started to close down the banks and the libraries. And so our notary is very comfortable with still doing those appointments. So I guess that's really, it's kind of, I would very much appreciate board feedback on, you know, what, where you guys all, how you feel about this. If we went back to curbside in tier three and just your overall feelings about that. Hopefully I presented that all well. There's a lot of other information. There's a million different service models that we've gone through and staff are probably very sick of me because every day I'm like, well, what about this? What if we did it this way? What if we did this? So so we've thought through all of those. So I will say if we do or when we do go back to curbside, it'll be a well-oiled machine. We have the experience behind us. We also want to make sure that and we already have marketing, you know, working on this and the wording sounds great that it's, you know, if you don't know what you want to put on hold, call us. We're putting, you know, we have, I can't remember, book bundles, curbside bundles, I think it's called curbside bundles. So all different, you know, other tools that we would have for folks who, you know, just wanted to come in and browse. So if they just say, hey, I like murder mysteries and Janet Ivanovich is my favorite author, we would be like, okay, we're on it. We got a, you know, curbside bundle for you. Or I just want a few games, you know, PS3, whatever. I don't even know all the consoles, you know, PS3, whatever's on the shelf, grab me five, you know, about soccer or something. So, you know, marketing has worked on that. So it's kind of like curbside enhanced, I guess, is maybe a way of looking at it. But these are it's a struggle. I mean, the thought of closing the doors again, you know, even for browsing is so heartbreaking. So, but also at the same time, like I said, I want us to be part of the solution. And we are a local government. I think that we do have a little, you know, added responsibility as far as making sure we are being responsible and part of the solution. So board feedback is welcome.
One question I have. If we remain open for browsing or open for access to the internet, does that would then involve a staff member back in the lobby behind the desk checking IDs to make sure that they're residents? Or would you have to call ahead to make an appointment? People wouldn't be allowed to just walk in. What are your thoughts on how that would go?
Yeah, so the computer piece, we have done that before. And so, yeah, they can call us and it would be Westmont residents. So we actually have their card number because that's how we make their appointments, so we know they're Westmont residents. Or usually what happens is they just, as they're leaving that day, they say, could you make it for me again tomorrow at 10 a.m.? So, and then when they came in, they would just say, you know, I'm John Smith. And we would say, oh yeah, you're on computer 5. And so they would go back there. As far as browsing, I mean, there's multiple ways you could do it. We wouldn't have to say it would only be Westmont residents. There would be an issue of, if no one else was allowing that in the area, would we get a lot of other communities, patrons, you know, coming in? That's part of where I keep tripping up, and Brittany knows this. There's no elegant solution for this, the appointment. We did it by appointments or asking people at the door if they're Westmont residents. I feel like it's, you know, point of potential conflict with other people. It's cold weather. I don't know that we want, you know, people queuing up. I can't imagine me telling, you know, anyone really when it's, you know, 15 degrees out, you have to wait out here until this next person leaves. It's just a tricky customer service. You know, and we want to make sure that patrons, our expectations are clear of what they would be expecting when they came to the library. And so it's just, it would be a brand new model. And then as far as having staff at the desks, I don't know if that was part of your question, but you know, that would be another thing we would be considering if we allowed people in for browsing, just to make sure it really was only browsing and that it's not, you know, and it, trust me, that this is horrible that these were, you know, this is goes against everything we are as librarians, but you know, we would want to make sure we're not encouraging folks to come in and then sit down and have a really lengthy reference interaction with us for a long time, which regulars do, and we want them to do that. But we would have to think of kind of those service points of how we would deal with those. Because we're also, you know, splitting staff up even further now. Right now we have two at the desk, and we're gonna move one. So because those two are, you know, that would be considered close contact for an entirety of a shift. So we are separating them. So there's no, to answer your question, there's no elegant way of doing that level, you know, the appointment. Other libraries have done it. They have, you know, Elmhurst the entire time has been appointment only. So you go online and you put your card in and you get an appointment for an hour for just to get in the building. We didn't have to do that because if the traffic wasn't so high. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Just one more quick one.
Yeah.
What is, what's 25% capacity for us? I assume that includes staff and everybody who's in the building. So how many would we be talking about?
It does. Brittany, I won the bet, although it was the wrong trustee who I thought was going to ask that first. But yeah, so overall, the building capacity is 60. So 25% is 15. But we have, you know, we looked at capacity overall. I mean, that's what we can have, but we also looked at it by different areas. So we did like computer lab, you know, if we broke it out from the, you know, however we did it, would be like 5, you know, that's what we've just reduced it down to, because even though you can have more in there, it's kind of, you know, for an hour of sitting there, it's kind of tight. So, and then we said, you know, like 10 upstairs, right? That'd be like 2 families maybe potentially coming in. I don't think, you know, capacity is has been a problem. There's certain times that are busier. A lot of people are just coming in to grab their holds from the lobby, to be honest. We don't have the exact numbers on that, but anecdotally, I think, right, Brittany? Not if I'm telling the truth.
No, I think there are a lot of in and outs. And then I do think we have, like every library, like we said, our regulars who want to sit down, who want to have conversations, who want to, you know, have their reader's advisory, hit the computer. But yeah, I mean, a lot of what we see is come in, hit the hold shelf, and they're immediately out. We switched over to checking the items out for patrons so that they can be even quicker. And yeah, most of them, even in that, I mean, they're in the lobby for 2 seconds and then they're on their way.
And would browsing the shelves still be part of this model, or the people, the capacity limits would apply just to the computer reservations? And
no, capacity limits are overall. Yeah.
But this model includes people that within the capacity limits obviously could come in and still browse the shelves, or no?
Well, those are some of the options we're still trying to decide, if that you know answers your question. If we went curbside, and strictly curbside, it would be curbside, and then I still think we could do computer appointments and notary appointments, but otherwise, you know, your holds, your pickups are curbside. There would be no browsing. What we did say is, you know, yeah, we could do something where we made appointments for browsing, or we could say only Westmont residents can come in for browsing. We could put limits on it. It's a little messier to do those things, but it's not impossible.
Just a quick question, follow-up question on that. What do you sense the pulse of the staff on this browsing thing? Because they're the ones most likely to be exposed for a longer duration and might be nervous about that, right?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid question. We did, you know, managers did touch base with everyone last week to talk about some of these things. I think at the time, you know, and they've said all along is they trust the decisions we've made and the safety protocols we have in place. I think that was last week, though. If I'm being honest, I think that, and especially if a lot of our neighboring libraries are going to curbside, and just with the, you know, and I don't want to come at this from a place of fear, but the numbers being so much higher now than they were even in the spring, I do worry about morale on that issue, for sure. And we are keeping to that two-team model to try and keep, you know, cross-contamination, for a better word, limited. But it, to your point, Rajesh, too, it's also, you know, and I know I put this in the email, quarantining and just a staff positive or multiple staff positive case could throw everything up in the air anyway. You know, right now, I think it's 3 staff quarantining. And that's pretty much what it's been consistently for a little while here, is you get one person back in the rotation and someone else has to go out and, you know, get tested or wait for a close contact to get tested. So that's also an issue for us that could happen overnight, right? Where we would have to, we just don't have the staff to do it.
I want to go back to the capacity again. Our capacity is 60.
I was surprised by that as well.
Did you say that includes staff?
Yeah. Did you think it would be higher?
Mm-hmm.
So yes. 15. So 15 would be the 25%, and that would include the staff.
I just would have thought our building capacity was higher than 60.
Me too.
It is. So yeah, no. So that doesn't include the staff, but it is 60, and it was higher than 60, but we did lower it when we did by areas. We did lower it. But the 60, I'm sorry, the 60 does not include the staff.
But what do you mean you lowered it?
We lowered it. We looked at it by different areas. So, for example, if you did the lobby, it was actually, we could, and we have this written down, Julie, somewhere. Julie did a lot. She measured the square footage everywhere, and we can send this to you guys. But we did, she's pulling out her maps. We did, it did say like, I'm making this up. Like, so I'll give you the actual hard numbers.
One quick question. I think the reason why we think the capacity should be higher is because it's 60 people with social distancing, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not the total building capacity. It's 60 people who can stay far enough away the way they're supposed to stay far enough away. And then 25% of that is where you get the number.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
So that, yeah. Because, for example, I mean, the KMR, I think our actual capacity on that one is like
75.
Yeah. It's like ridiculous. So, yeah. No, I'm sorry. There's an actual calculation that you use. You do the square footage and you take out some things, and then they have to be socially distanced. And so the numbers, when we did that calculation, though, we were like, it's a little skewed because so we don't ever have more than, five people in nonfiction.
Yeah.
But we could have more than 10 in the lobby. So we just tried to, there was a little, we did it a little bit differently. And then we also looked at the foyer up in the youth department where there seems to, be more people congregated. And you had to socially distance them out. It just, the math didn't work for what we thought was actually a healthy amount to be in that area. So
I remember when we were having that conversation, we were in different areas because certain of our areas, depending on how the stacks are, limits even more. So in theory, we would think we have more space than that, but just how different areas are configured, you actually can't fit that many socially distanced. Like the DVD area, if you've ever been there, it's very tight.
Yeah, and that's where people go. So,
I think, can we not just do that to start with the curbside and then maybe revisit it after a couple of weeks, and maybe by that time the state also changes its direction a little bit based on the number of cases, so that really it doesn't have to become this cumbersome of a discussion as well as for the staff,
I would be in favor of that too. I feel like it's always easier to add things back in than to take things away. And I think if this really is going to be a pause or a reset or whatever the governor is calling it this time, I would like the library to be a community leader in modeling good behavior in that. And I think part of that is changing our habits. And I think, we're not going to be able to browse stores or libraries the same way that we used to be able to, hopefully just for a short time. But I do think that it would be best to follow the trend of the other neighboring libraries and stick to curbside. And then hopefully in another few weeks, maybe if things level out, hopefully, or if there are lots and lots of requests that the staff feel are extremely valid reasons why this person needs to have access to the inside of the building, then we can reevaluate.
It seems if we allow browsing, probably we're going to have to be turning people away at the door, especially since most everybody else is going to curbside. I don't know if that would create bad feelings with the community or not. So maybe curbside for now is the best way to go.
I also feel like when I look at Julia's list of essential services, I mean, ultimately, in the end, it's set up so that people still have access to the items in the library, whether it's internet use or the books themselves or the notary or whatever. Like, you're maybe restricting the way that people get access to that, browsing versus having to put in a request. And I have to imagine that in very few cases, someone actually needs to browse versus give you that request for, some murder mysteries or something. So I would also register my support for curbside. I mean, the numbers are very, very dire. It's pretty crazy out there. And I agree with Heather's comment about being a community leader. And again, to me, it's the plan that Julia, you proposed with the essential services allows our patrons access to our materials. They can still get what they need. They may not be able to browse, but the point is they can still get the books, they can still use the internet. And so to me, that's the important part, but we can do it in a much more, safe manner, which hopefully is a, somewhat short period of time.
I have one other question about computer lab use. I know just from prior conversations about how that's been working. Have we noticed whether patrons are any better at cleaning up after themselves the way we've asked them to, or our staff having to go in and wipe everything down, even though we've set the stuff out for patrons to do that? We've asked them to wipe it down before they start, wipe down when you're finished. Is that actually happening? Or if it hasn't been happening and we don't have staff to be back there cleaning stations, with the spike in numbers, are we running a higher risk of leaving the labs open in that way?
So we do have, we have two air filtration systems that we put back in the lab. And we do have the windows there, and we do keep them even a crack open when it's cold. So there's a little bit of movement of air there, which, you know, from all reports is very important. So we do have that. As far as patrons cleaning up after themselves, I don't know for sure. I don't know. Staff are not going back there in between patron, you know, during the day. We go in the morning and we go at night. And we will start more routinely for, funny word, but fogging back there, which is really just a very high powered, you know, Lysol spray, but high powered. So I don't know if patrons are actually cleaning up after themselves or wiping down in between shifts. But we do have the signs there. We have multiple sprays there. And I hate to say it's like at their own risk, but hopefully they are wiping it down before they would use it, right? Yeah. But, you know, we did have, we did reduce it, like I said, as of Monday, we did reduce it to just 5 computers. So that's, we have to, so again, because I just felt like it's, even though they were socially distanced, it just felt a little close to have, you know, 10 people back in that area for, you know, potentially an hour at a time. So.
Another benefit, I'm sorry, Julia, go ahead.
No, that's okay, go ahead.
Going to say another benefit of the computer appointment system is that if there's somebody who is consistently not following protocol and putting staff at risk or other patrons at risk due to their behavior, there's then a record of who that person is, and conversations can be had, or, you know, steps can be taken to make sure that person doesn't put other people at risk. And you'd hate for that to happen, but you know, I feel like it's important to protect the staff and people who are following the rules right now.
No, and that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. That is a good point. So we do, you know, we are going to significantly pull back on the staff help that's available for computer use, because we do know that if a staff member walks back there to help someone, they're usually back there for quite some time. And so we've really, really been working with adult services staff on empowering them to be able to say, you know, I only have a limited amount of time to help you back there. And again, goes against everything we are as librarians in what we want to do. But I've, you know, and they get it. It's for everyone's safety. So we've really pulled back on that. And we would continue with that model. Well, we will be continuing with that, so that staff are not getting, they're not going back there and getting caught back there. So as far as mask wearing, we do know that, you know, the people like to get deep into the building and take their masks off. We have zero tolerance policy on that one. So, and we do know if we see a repeat offender, staff are very good at communicating amongst each other. And we have told people, this is the rule the entire time you're here. Every time you're here, if you can't follow it, we'll be asked to leave, and then you'll be, you know, you may be banned for a certain period of time. So we'll be just as strict with that.
So is the consensus that was building, starting with Heather, regarding the model moving forward, one of curbside pickup for material, no browsing, but still also offering the computer lab reservations?
Yes, I think.
And then, yeah, hopefully it's just a pause right? And that it's brief. But we can also, you know, like always, we'll keep our ear to the ground and we'll see if other possibilities come up that we're, you know, we feel it's safe to do so, where, you know, potentially Westmont residents could come in briefly to browse. But we'll add that in if we feel like that, if we have a solution that works and one that's, you know.
Remember when bed bugs were the worst things we had to worry about?
I've talked to other library directors and we've been like, do you remember when we used to stress and like the email threads and the text threads were about bad weather and if we should close a couple hours early?
I just said to Julia today, I'm like, man, I'd really kill for another squirrel to chase around. Like, that's really great right now.
Julia, are any...
I'm with that front door open, so...
Are any libraries talking about closing completely?
Oak Park closed completely. They're the only ones that I know of right now, but it, you know, again, that was as of 7 p.m. So there was a lot of activity, discussion, multiple email threads, director listserv, comparing what plans are. But they were also, you know, Oak Park is also in Cook County, and Cook County had a stay-at-home advisory that started, I believe, yesterday. So I think some of the Cook County libraries, even the suburban Cook, were taken, that they kind of took action a little sooner. So, but, you know, if you listen to Pritzker today, he said it's not a stay-at-home order as long as we stay at home voluntarily. Sounds like he's, you know, not going to be too shy about doing it if numbers don't come down. And again, the hospitalization rates are pretty scary, considering those always lag behind the infection rates. So, but so that brings me to the second piece of item C, which is essential services. So because it doesn't sound like he's going to make any, there's not going to be any specific guidance for libraries, we do fall under the local government industry. And so you as elected officials have the authority to say that there are some essential services that we provide. So if a stay-at-home order were enacted or all non-essential businesses and operations were told to cease, if you say that some of these are essential, we can then continue to offer those. Again, they would not be in any irresponsible manner. There's different ways of how we could provide those. But curbside is, you know, the perfect example. So if you say that access to our resources is an essential service that we provide our community, we could continue to do that even if a stay-at-home order was announced. Now, that on the flip side of that, you know, when I talked to the attorney, I wanted to make sure that it didn't mean that if you say it's essential, we are forced to be open and we have to let everyone in. And, you know, he said absolutely not. It's within our discretion to determine how that is provided. And if it comes to safety and health issues and you had to close, you absolutely could close, even if the board had said access to resources is essential. But you can close and you can determine how you provide those. And so it can be terminated and modified by the library director. But it's you as the elected officials should be the ones to say, yes, these are essential. We give staff the authority to still provide those versus me making that declaration. So I provided those, you know, the bulleted 3-point list. It's very, I did it in a way that we still have discretion on how we can provide those in different ways. So if there's questions about any of the three, happy to answer those. And again, it's if available, it's, you know, when we still get to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm. How is staff protected at curbside?
So to actually have have it run internally, there would be five staff. So we have someone who's, Brittany's the expert. She's been working on this, especially all day today. But we have a runner, so that's someone that's kind of stationed by the front door to actually run it. And that's, I mean, they're protected. We're wearing a mask when we run it out. You're popping your trunk or you're just rolling down your window and it's like a 2 second. We plop your things wherever you want them plopped. And then we're back in the building. So that's as much of an interaction we would have at that level. Then we have someone who's answering the front desk and checking materials. We have someone in youth answering and pulling items from that department, someone adult doing that. And then we have potentially a fifth person just checking in bins and things that are coming back. And to that note, just so you all know, back in the spring, they did stop delivery. I don't know if y'all remember an interlibrary loan. That is not the message that we're receiving that Rails wants to do this time around, thankfully. That's huge. So there's been no, they even said at the beginning of this week that that's not their intention, because we know so much more now about how the virus spreads and it's not through material. So there's that should remain. So we'll have a staff member checking in items. And then we will have, you know, there will be some other limited staff in the building administratively. I have to be here sometimes, even if I'm not, you know, sometimes I'm the runner. Julie has to be here. But all other, you know, we've already identified there's some staff, you know, graphic design, she works from home. And we work in teams, we work in shifts, and we will be spread out. You know, we don't have more than, you know, one person in one area. We're definitely more than socially distanced.
Can you let me know what sort of things the notary services covers to warrant, you know, additional exposure by the staff? It seems like the one thing on the list that's probably the most expendable, but I don't fully understand notary services to begin with.
Yeah, so one, we have one notary and she is more than comfortable. I even checked with her yesterday. She knows all the, she probably wouldn't mind me mentioning that her husband is a doctor, works with, you know, knows a lot about COVID stuff. So she's comfortable with this level of offering this level of service. It's at a station. We have a desk that has a shield, whatever you want to call those, sneeze guards or whatever. So the person getting something notarized is one side and she's on the other. They're both masked. The reason that, you know, we added this, and this again is if she's available. She's only in the building, half the time because of the team structure. So she has to be here to offer it. But a lot of what we noticed in the past months was wills, people getting their wills notarized, and powers of attorney, which is very, you know, it's sad actually when you think about that, but a lot of people have been doing that. There's other examples as well, but we know that was really, people really struggled to find notaries last time. And there are other, you know, I know the village offers it, but that's just during their hours. And if they're limiting their building hours in any way, that would be impacted. So I did check with her again yesterday. She said she's perfectly comfortable with it. The interactions are never more than 15 minutes, but they're usually under five. It's literally, she's looking at their ID. She's signing where it says witness and stamping. So they are brief. It would only be Westmont residents. So I don't think we would get as many as we have been, because we have been allowing just whoever. So it would only be our residents. If at any point she's not comfortable with it, absolutely, we can.
So I think just following up on Carrie's point, I mean, is notary service really an essential service of the library, or should we keep it as an optional?
Well, I mean, aren't we covering our bases if we make it essential? And then if we have the ability, Julia has the ability to revoke the service if there's concerns.
Yeah. And I mean, it would be by appointment only. And so, you know, we could make sure that she's telling them, you know, you need to have everything ready, you know, kind of going through the steps. if she's at any point uncomfortable with it, we can absolutely not do it.
Yeah, in my mind, it's you know, equally important. Well, arguably more important that the staff is comfortable with everything here, but obviously there's also the, you know, the concern about spread, and just, you know, do we take, you know, the harshest possible approach to, you know, limiting exposure. The example I'm thinking of is when the curbside discussion was happening. You know, it makes a lot of sense to me to insist that everybody just pop their trunk so that you're not, you know, exposing the staff to the envelope of the cockpit of the car. It just seems like an unnecessary risk, you know, pretty easy cost benefit thing. So, you know, it's great that the person providing the notary services is comfortable with it. I think that's, you know, priority number one. But, you know, that's obviously not the end of the story either.
I think as long as, like you were saying, Julia, there's clarification from the lawyer that these are the things that the library can provide if they're limited to just essential service, just providing essential services, or if we go into a situation where everything has to close except for essential services, that it's not that people are guaranteed access to these things. I think as long as that distinction is clear, I'm okay with that. I was trying to look at these things outside of the lens of a pandemic. If there was like a flood at the library, are these still things that we could provide to a patron? And it does seem like it's a reasonable list of, like, you know, very important things that we could still, you know, provide to a patron if like half of the building was damaged. And, you know, can a staff still go in and get a book for you and bring it out to you? Yes. Can a notary meet you outside and sign your paperwork? Yes. Just trying to like, it's so hard right now because like we're looking at everything through the pandemic lens, but if we're deciding what are essential services, I do feel like that should carry over into other contexts. But it does sound like with the clarification from the attorney, and the staff comfort level, it because I had the same question. I talked to Julie about that yesterday about the notary. Is that really essential? But it seems like everybody on staff at least is comfortable with that.
So are you looking for one of us to make a formal motion to accept these three things, or is our general discussion and what sounds like general support for these three things enough for you, Julia? Or, because I'm wondering if we make a motion, I want to make sure we include what we need to include in it. Like, these things are deemed essential, but unless, what else do we need to tack on? So that otherwise I don't think you want us to be calling like special meeting a week from now, because it's stay at home mandate and we have to revise the motion we just made. How do we phrase a motion that covers what you might need us to cover, or have we covered it by talking about it?
I think you could make a motion, and I think it could be just very basic that, let's see here, what did I, approval of a list of essential services. I mean, you can add on to that if you want, you know, because I know there's been concern, and you know, talking to Heather, that the list is subject, you know, to modification. But that, you know, this is the list of essential services that the library can provide.
And if we put that that last sentence in, or the asterisk, this list is subject to modification. If we put that into the motion, wouldn't that cover it? Wouldn't that cover contingencies?
Yeah. Yeah, and that wording is exactly from the attorney.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify what someone might want to say should someone make the motion, so that we don't make a motion and then say, oh wait, we forgot something, and then we have to go through the whole process of revising the motion, amending the motion, and it gets very ridiculous. So as long as we sort of understand if somebody makes the motion, we're saying we move that the following services are essential and that this list is, as Elaine said, the asterisk sentence is what we add on to that.
All right, I'll give it a shot. I'd like to move to approve a list of essential services for the library, including access to library resources, access to the internet, and access to notary services, with the list being subject to modification and or termination at the discretion of the library director at any time based on emerging health guidance and data.
Second.
Heather and Elaine, any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fickman?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
So we will make the announcement about going curbside first thing tomorrow. Marketing's probably queued up already. And we will do that. I know tier three starts Friday. So we will either by the beginning of the day Friday start that or end of the day, we can kind of figure that out. But I do want to give, you know, folks enough just notice about it. So So Friday will be our target date. So,
Julia, can I suggest that if you're going to announce it ahead of time, that you change the occupancy rules now?
Yeah.
I'm hearing stories about libraries announcing, you know, tomorrow or in 3 days we're going curbside and just being overwhelmed with.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hate for that for at a time that you're trying to protect everybody for all of a sudden that to be disrupted.
Yeah, and we did do that last time. Yeah, because we said if we announced too soon, we didn't. That's why when we decided to close, we closed immediately. We didn't say we'll give you the weekend, which I know some libraries did and had that problem. Yeah, and we'll all figure it out. I'll work with Brittany to make sure one of us at any given time is in the lobby for the next couple days before that happens, for sure. So we know what we're doing in the next couple days, Brittany.
Very busy week.
Yeah, you know, people have been starting to ask. Even right when I walked in, there was someone asking, and we said, you know, we have a board meeting tonight to discuss it. So it's good if I prefer to be there, and Brittany, you know, I think feels the same. We can then field the questions, and if there's any comments or feedback from people, so we'll definitely make sure we're here. And thank you all. You know, I send updates to the staff on a regular basis, and they routinely send back just saying thank you to the board for the support through all of this. So I don't have to tell you, it's been quite a year. So and working in a public building on top of it. So I greatly appreciate it, and I really greatly appreciate your feedback tonight, because I feel like my decision making capabilities were, you know, reaching it. I wasn't able to make decisions. So your feedback helped me a lot. So I really appreciate that.
I want to say one more thing, just that the staff must be under an incredible amount of stress. I mean, I know you are, Julia and Brittany and everybody who's in the building. And I want to be sure staff is doing what they need to take care of themselves, not just in terms of having PPE and things like that, but that they're empowered to take a personal day when they need to take a personal day because it's just too much, or they are concerned about someone in their life. You know, they're not going to be effective employees if they can't, or people, like whole people, if they don't have those times. And you too, like, because I know you guys will be there as often as possible, but I just hope everybody's taking care of themselves.
Yeah, and we have been reminding them about taking PTO, and the message has been like, we know there's nowhere to go. We know there's nothing fun to do, but just take time off. So we have been encouraging that. We sent that out about the holidays as well, get requests in, even though we know, you know, it's going to be very different this year. But we will do that again. And it's possible, you know, with going curbside, that maybe that'll make it a little bit easier for folks. They won't feel as, you know, like they're abandoning somehow that they're doing that. So we will. And the managers have been awesome in talking to staff routinely about everything. And we do have some staff appreciation, I think a few fun things different, you know, they love food. We've always been like, oh, we'll just get, you know, a bunch of food in, but it's a little different doing that now. So staff managers have been very creative in how they can do that. So I think starting right after Thanksgiving, for a month, every week, there's something new for staff. So yeah.
Good.
All right. Unless anyone wants to call an executive session, then it looks like we can move on to a motion to adjourn. Last chance to say anything to anyone before we are cut off.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Be safe.
Yes.
I'll move to adjourn.
John?
Second. Elaine.
I doubt we need to discuss it. So roll call, please.
Trustee Booth?
Yes.
Trustee Carmichael?
Yes.
Secretary Delano?
Yes.
Vice President Martins?
Yes.
Treasurer O'Connor?
Yes.
Trustee Parikh?
Yes.
President Fichtel?
Yes.
7 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
And we are adjourned at 8:10 p.m. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe.
Yes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.